when we've made mistakes and we've burst out in anger and say something that's not commensurate with the scenario, we feel so guilty later. And if we do that often enough, we feel like a full-on homeschool mom failure. And if you can practice speaking to yourself in the same kind ways you would if you were calling me in a heated moment, I wouldn't say to you, "You're the worst parent ever. You should send the kids back. You shouldn't be homeschooling." I wouldn't be saying anything negative. I'd be like, "Yeah, girl, I feel ya. That does not sound fun. I'm sorry that, your child is off, or I don't know, maybe it isn't the child at all and you're just premenstrual and you're feeling all the feels. And I'm sorry you're feeling the way you are. You're an amazing mom. I love what you're doing. You're trying so hard. You're learning. You're growing alongside them." Those are the things you'd say to a girlfriend. We need to practice saying them to ourselves too.
Welcome to the Homeschool Compass podcast, a show that's all about finding confidence in community and help in the wisdom of those who've gone before. I'm your host, Amy Otto, and today I'm delighted to share a conversation with Teresa Wiedrich. Teresa is a mom of four who lives in the mountains of Western Canada, where she homeschools and gardens and raises goats and chickens. And she's also the author of a very helpful book called Homeschool Mama Self-Care, Nurturing the Nurturer. I know many of you have told me that you don't love the term self-care, and I'm right there with you. I think often our culture frames self-care in terms of escaping from our families as if our children are a burden that we need to be liberated from. And that is not at all what Teresa and I are talking about today. But I do believe with all my heart that if we as homeschool parents don't find ways to care for our physical and spiritual and emotional needs, we will not make it long as homeschoolers. So this is a conversation about what it looks like to prioritize our own wellness so that we can experience less overwhelm and find greater joy in our homeschool life. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Teresa Wiedrich. Thank you so much for joining us today, Teresa. I'm really honored to get to talk to you. I know you have a great story that's going to resonate with a lot of people. Would you start out by telling us a little bit about your family and maybe how you got started with homeschooling?
Yeah. Hello, everybody. I'm Teresa. I have four kids, aged almost 22 down to 14. And I discovered homeschooling because I was trying to find the arguments against it. So everyone around me seemed to be homeschooling, and I just thought, no, I'm a mainstream kind of girl and I don't wear jean jumpers. This is how I thought. And I want my kids to be socialized. Yes, I said that. And then I came across a book in a bookshop on a lark that said something like the homeschooling option, the reasons you might consider homeschooling or something. And I thought, this is perfect. I will get my arguments against it and I will know why I'm not going to do it. And by the end of the week, we were homeschooling.
The end of the week. That is a dramatic turnaround.
It really was.
Well, I know from conversations we've had in the past that through your years of homeschooling, your approach has changed pretty drastically from when you started to how you finished. Can you tell people a little bit about that? Because I think that is really interesting for people to hear.
So yeah, many iterations. It really depended on my growth or my understanding about myself, my understanding about my kids, digging deep into all the different homeschool philosophies and trying them out and discovering that they are lovely, but they don't necessarily work with my child. And the longer that I've done it, obviously, the more confident I've become, said every homeschool mom. And also, I got a clearer sense of what I thought an education was. And because I got clear on what I thought an education was anyway, I was able to translate that into my home.
Yeah. I think a lot of people start out very highly structured, trying to check all the boxes and do everything by the book. And then we find that that's not really sustainable. It's not lending itself to our thriving or our children's thriving. And then we kind of naturally loosen up as time goes on. And I think it's important for people to realize that that's sort of a natural part of the process. That doesn't mean that you're doing something wrong. If you come to the end of yourself in that moment and have to make a pivot, that's the journey that almost all of us, I think, have been on.
I think we go into homeschooling hoping that we will just get the right philosophy, the right curriculum, the right routine, the ideal day timer with beautiful color pens, and we'll do it. And then we wonder, I don't know, am I doing this good enough? Or is this really going to work? Those doubts, that not good enough experience that most homeschool parents talk about. And we expect to get infused with, well, we discovered this beautiful lifestyle, so therefore it will work. And discover along the way too that, wait, who am I and how am I experiencing this thing? And is this really working for how I want to engage a discussion or engage a book discussion or an education in general? And also look at our child and say, they're fidgeting in their seat for an hour and they're not learning anything. They like playing outside, or they love spending hours in their room writing stories. And so then when we see that long enough, we go, oh, this child is X or Y, or A or B, and maybe we need to pivot based on how things are working in that context. And it's only by practice, and it's only by showing up each day with our child and really watching or observing what's going on, and also how we're engaging it, that we get clearer and more confident. And so it's a process, like with everything. Whatever we sign up to do in life, the more we do it, the more likely we're to get better at it.
I wonder if you've seen any ways that homeschooling has allowed your children as they get older to invest time in those special interests of theirs, to grow in the things that they're uniquely called to do. Because I think so often homeschooling really allows for that in a way that the mainstream path does not.
Yeah, I could actually use a variety of different examples. I've seen two of our girls have gone to high school. So we're in an area where there isn't a homeschool co-op. There's next to no one homeschooling in high school. And though we love where we live, in that regard, it was probably the only thing I don't care about or care for in this area, is there isn't really a solid framework for homeschooling in high school. And so two of them advocated for going to school. And the way they show up with their teachers, or the way they've showed up with people in authority, they just assume that people are going to work with them to figure out their schedules, or you're going to get me the class I want. You know, my oldest went to ask for a specific class, and this person said, no, it's not available to you. But she had the time and had no other class, so she waited outside that class until finally the teacher said, oh, well, we could sneak you in. And so she found a way into that class. And I, you know, the other gal who also went into a high school had an experience where she just assumes that the person that's helping her to decide her semesters is going to work alongside her to make things work for her so that she can learn the way she wants to learn. And my girl that went through high school homeschool, she is in college now. She's in her second year of a fine arts degree. She's in dance and hoping to go to a ballet company in the end. And she has a different experience of her classes. She very much doesn't think that grades are necessary, and she doesn't understand why there's this random rubric assigned to her that she has to achieve certain things, because isn't the goal just about her learning? And it is hilarious for me as a homeschool mom to hear them frame education in a very different way than others might think about it.
It sounds like they've really taken ownership for their own experience, which is a beautiful thing and something that I don't think you can access as easily if you've been brought up in the system where it's just, these are the hoops you have to jump through. And it doesn't matter if you learn or not. It just matters if you can, you know, mark down these answers correctly on the test. And so that's so encouraging and exciting to see that they have held on to that even as they've, you know, gone into other settings that stayed with them.
Yeah. And also their choices, you know, the specific areas of interest are truly born from who they are. And so they're going out into the world doing things that they love. I remember it's always such a stress, I think, for kids when they're graduating, when they're about 18 and everybody asks them, what are you going to do for the rest of your life? Because I don't know about you, but I did not do the same thing I was doing when I was 18, a couple years after that now. And I've had some big pivots in the last few years myself. And I see those kids as being asked really a large question, but they actually are very much doing things that are reflective of who they really are. And I think that that is part of our goal in an education, is we're actually helping to educate a specific person, not a system, not a classroom, not even all our children. If I had 8 kids or 12 kids or 2 kids, my goal isn't to educate all of them the exact same way, because they're not the same. So then who is this person in front of me? What can I take cues from them right now? And how do I help them do the thing they're meant to do in this life uniquely to them throughout their lives? And that doesn't have to happen when they're 22, when they've got their, you know, theoretically, this goal of having them through a university education, and then they get to decide what they're going to do. I think we have to facilitate that even when they're 8 and 6 and 12 and 18.
Yes, it's crazy of us to expect an 18-year-old to just come up with this plan of what they're going to do for their life when we haven't given them any autonomy in the process up to that point. Homeschooling is miles ahead of the mainstream approach in that way, in that they're getting to have a voice in their education. They're getting to share what they're excited about with an adult who cares about them and is invested in listening to their ideas and helping them access resources to grow in the things that they're passionate about from the time they're so tiny. And so when they get to that point of being 18, 20, 22, trying to make these decisions about what's next, they already have decades of experience knowing themselves to draw from.
And so what I've noticed, because I look at that and I say, why is that? That no matter how someone homeschools, they typically end up having a child that's more self-directed or self-differentiated. And I think it's a few reasons. One is we are paying attention to their interests and all of that realm, but we're also attached to them and they're connected with us. And by the mere act of being seen and heard, they're able to have that mirrored inside. They're able to experience that themselves, that they are seeing and hearing themselves. And they also have a lot more solitude. So if they're in a school system, they're just constantly having activities or voices being spoken to them about what they need to do next. And there is no sense of, like you said, autonomy. This is the de-schooling element that I often speak to. And like for 6 months, I did radically unschool. I fell in, again, another book I found in the library, John Holt. I read a book from him. Then someone told me about John Taylor Gatto, and I read all of that. And so because I was really challenged, you know, the way I was trying to do it was very private school and more intense private school than a private school might provide. And then I just went whole hog into unschooling. And then some of the kids got bored and I brought back more routine and whatnot. But it did serve the relationship with me and my oldest daughter. And she's such a self-directed learner by nature that I let go of Latin. I let go of all those things. And then right now she is doing she's completing a double major at a university in ancient history and Latin.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, Teresa, you have written this beautiful book, Homeschool Mama Self-Care, and I want to make sure we get to spend some time unpacking that. I wonder if maybe we could just start out with what is meant by the term self-care. I know I've heard from a lot of people in our audience that this is a concept that they struggle with. And I know many people who are listening have grown up like I did, kind of in a Sunday school class where it was drilled into you that God is first, others are second, I am last. And so we come into motherhood with this idea that we can't attend to any of our own needs unless every single other person has all of their needs taken care of. Our house is perfectly tidy and organized. We've fulfilled every service opportunity that's out there. And then, and only then, if there's any time or energy or money left, could we actually do something that pours into
I think
what?
you responded yourself right there. Why that doesn't sound quite right. You know, it is called, the book's called Homeschool Mama Self-Care, Nurturing the Nurturer. And I do wish that I had titled it Homeschool Mama Wellness. So maybe if first of all we think of it in context of wellness, that might help us. But I do think that we have this natural tendency, and I most definitely, my entire story of overwhelm originates. The entire reason I wrote this book is because I wasn't serving myself in any way, or I wasn't meeting my needs. And when I have these conversations with other moms, which are common, this is common, that they feel overwhelmed or they're not feeling good enough or just all the big emotions, they haven't actually stopped to ask themselves, are you addressing your needs? There is no addressing your needs because we have stuff to do. There are other people that have needs. But when we put ourselves in that place of what looks to me like supermom, that you have some capacity, godlike capacity, to do something more than the rest of humanity, you're almost putting yourself in a place of God when you're saying, I can do everything, not through Christ who strengthens us, but through me because I'm a mom.
Yeah, that's really insightful. It's almost a form of idolatry that we're saying we don't need rest. We don't need to tend to our souls. We don't need to process our emotions. We're just these machines that can keep going and not have any needs of our own. And that's not realistic. It's not who God has created us to be. He's created us for dependence on Him and for dependence on each other. And so self-care, even if we don't really love that term, that idea of tending to our own needs has to be part of the conversation. And it doesn't have to be selfish. There's always going to be, times when what you need is to sleep and you have a baby who's nursing who needs you to get up in the night and care for them. And of course, in those moments, there are seasons where the needs of other people can take precedence, but it just means that your needs still are part of the conversation.
For me, when I see that as more a homeschool mom's identity often is wrapped up in her homeschool life. And understandably, by the way, been there, done that. If you read the book or you hang around me long enough, you're going to hear my story of overwhelm. I had a few, but I speak to one. And very common experience for us to be fully wrapped up in all the needs of our kids, our homes. And it is very instinctive for us to do that. And it's a beautiful thing that we do that. And also, like we were speaking to, we're not those godlike creatures. We do actually have to say, hey, is there something that I need? And it's not just time away, although time away is big. And it's not just fueling our brains with nutritious things or burning off energy by exercising or checking our thoughts and asking ourselves, what am I thinking about this scenario? Am I thinking the worst case scenario in this? It's also about developing you and allowing you to learn things. Create a curriculum, or maybe I shouldn't use the word curriculum, but create time in the day to do things that you love as well. I love Impressionism. And none of my kids were like, hey, mom, can we pull out the Impressionist book? Or, there's a classical music book with a CD that we listen to every year. And those are things that I loved. And so we would do those things for 5, 10 minutes every morning after breakfast as part of our circle time or morning time. And when the kids were older, I called it literary hour just so that they'd still hang in there. But we would do things that I love too. And actually now I have the pleasure of going to art galleries or museums with my kids because they know that that's what I love to do with them, and they don't hate it anymore.
One of the ways that I have found helpful to think about self-care, maybe we've talked about this before, but somewhere along the line, I heard this idea, and I wish I could remember where, but they said you can think of self-care as, in a way, almost parenting yourself, like responding to yourself the way a loving parent would. So if I had a child that was stressed out and overwhelmed, I wouldn't necessarily say, okay, why don't you sit down with a credit card and go shopping? Or why don't you eat this giant bag of M&Ms? I might say to them, let's help you go outside and get some fresh air and go for a walk. Or maybe we'll have a good lunch that has some protein and some vegetables in it. Or maybe we need to try a drink of water. You know, you're not just indulging every base instinct that you have selfishly. That's not what self-care is really about. It's about what do we actually need and how can we go about meeting those needs in a real way. Maybe it's going to bed earlier instead of scrolling Instagram, or maybe it's taking a few moments to have a deep breath before you start zooming into your day. Maybe it's taking a few minutes to jot some things down in a journal. It doesn't have to be this huge commercialized, you know, leave your family and go away for a week by yourself. It can be very, very small things.
And most of us could never do that week alone. I couldn't do that. I have goats and chickens and a life that just requires me to be more anchored anyways. And those things sound like fun. And if you're doing it, you can invite me. But I'll find somebody to look after the goats. But I think more than those big things, it is really looking inside and saying, okay, what's going on with you? How are you doing? When you speak to journaling, I think that's such a powerful self-awareness strategy. It's something that I instinctively did since I was 7. And I didn't have much to say then. I would just say, I woke up, I made my bed, I brushed my teeth. I wrote that in my journal for years because I didn't have much to say. But along the way, I would write down my crushes, you know, all the things that young girls do. But I was also writing about how I felt. And that practice, I think, is highly underrated because you're seeing you reflected back on paper, or you're clarifying what you're really thinking. And because we have such busy lives, I think it's a value to stop and say, wait, what is going on? And the biggest tip that I often give moms is to schedule a mindfulness moment into your phone or into a device. And what I mean by that is just when it tells you to stop for a moment, which for me was always about Monday morning at 11 a.m. That was the time I was definitely hoping that everybody would be doing what I wanted them to do, be motivated, not bored, and fully engaged. And I was feeling at my most anxious, irritated, that they weren't as engaged as I would like them to be. I typically found that time of day or 5 o'clock, about dinner hour, that I would need to check in with myself. And so this is a practice I've built over the course of time. It certainly wasn't what I was doing in the beginning. But just to breathe and ask myself how I'm feeling and where am I feeling what I'm feeling inside my body. And was there a reason that I was feeling that? Was there a story? Was there something I was reacting to? Just by the mere act of me seeing that, is it helps to dispel the energy or the agitation or stress or whatever is going on inside.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that awareness really helps short circuit that process that we all get into where we're just running on autopilot and then we're not even thinking about all of the stress that's building up inside of us. And then some child asks us a perfectly innocent question and this rage comes pouring out of us. And, or at least that's what happens for me. And then we're like, where did this come from? Like this question, this inciting incident did not warrant this kind of a response. And why am I so out of control? Then we start to feel guilty. Next thing you know, we're beating ourselves up. Yeah.
So I hear your story all the time. It was my story. You know, I actually heard that yesterday. So this discussion was something that I heard yesterday when I was doing a self-compassion class for homeschool moms. And she said to me, I don't feel safe sharing this with other people because there's an expectation that you won't feel angry with your child. Mm-hmm. And I do think there's something of us as moms that we don't want to feel angry with our kids because we love them so much. And when they're tucked in bed at the end of night and sleeping soundly and so innocent, we think, how could we be angry with these perfect angelic creatures? But it turns out there's many reasons why we might feel angry. But anger is a human emotion. It sure has potential to be destructive, but it's a human emotion. And we need to be able to address that emotion and create a plan around it instead of just hoping we don't ever feel it again or trying to manage it by telling ourselves, well, yes, you can feel angry. Just don't yell. And I've tried those. Those don't work. But creating a sense of almost like speaking to a really, you said a parent nurturing a child or a girlfriend speaking to you. There was a moment, I'll just explain this in a story, that there was a moment where I felt really upset. Wish I remember why, but I'm pretty sure I can recreate it based on many of my moments in homeschooling, when perhaps I was so lovingly planning some morning and it didn't work the way that I wanted it. Kids weren't interested, or they were bored, or they didn't want to start studies again on Monday morning. And they were fighting with each other and complaining about having to put away the peanut butter, or you fill in the blank. I remember feeling really intense, and I just pivoted and walked away instead of trying to breathe and slow down in the moment, because I knew I was too upset. Nothing would come out of my mouth that would serve this moment. So I just turned, walked away, tried to text my husband, because that's what I do. And I know that's a lot of other moms are texting someone. And so I was madly texting my husband, who is an eMERGE physician. So he was doing something more emergent than helping or able to be accessed by me in that moment. But then, so I couldn't access him. So then I tried to text my friend. She wasn't available. And so I decided just to go stand in front of the mirror. And something weird happened. Like, I know this sounds really unusual, but standing in front of a mirror and seeing your own face when you're really upset. And there's something about just seeing yourself. And I was very upset, but I wasn't just upset. I looked really sad. I'm really confused, and I didn't know, what am I supposed to do right now? I don't know what to do, and I feel so stuck, but so frustrated. And just by the mere act of seeing myself in a mirror, I felt less intense. But then learning how to speak to yourself like you would to a girlfriend, you know, when we've made mistakes, and we've, like you said, when we burst out in anger and say something that's not commensurate with the scenario, we feel so guilty later. And if we do that often enough, we feel like a full-on homeschool mom failure. And if you can practice speaking to yourself in the same kind ways you would, if you were calling me in a heated moment, I wouldn't say to you, Amy, you're the worst parent ever. You should send the kids back. You shouldn't be homeschooling. You know, I wouldn't be saying anything negative. I'd be like, yeah, girl, I feel ya. That does not sound fun. I'm sorry that, you know, your child is off, or I don't know, maybe it isn't the child at all, and you're just premenstrual and you're feeling all the feels. And I'm sorry you're feeling the way you are. You're an amazing mom. I love what you're doing. You're trying so hard. You're learning. You're growing alongside them. Those are the things you'd say to a girlfriend. We need to practice saying them to ourselves too.
Yes. And I think sometimes we feel like if we adopt that kind of nurturing language towards ourselves, we're like letting ourselves get away with something somehow, and we need to sort of kick ourselves into gear, and somehow that's going to change things. But it really 100%. Doesn't. It doesn't work. Yeah. It, you know, it would be fine if that helped in any way, but it just doesn't work.
The way that God engages us, long suffering, and will tolerate something over and over, but is always compelling us towards growth and always saying, okay, walk in the way that is going to serve, that's going to serve all of those around you, to be more loving, to be more gracious, to be forgiving. And it turns out the hardest person to forgive and be gracious with is ourselves. But that's how God engages.
Yes. And he takes us where we are. He understands our limitations. He understands our weaknesses. And he calls us to move forward. He calls us to grow and to learn and to come to new places of understanding and to mature. But he doesn't demand that from us instantaneously. He walks with us in a process. And so we can extend that same kindness and patience and grace to ourselves and to our children. Yeah. And when we start extending it to ourselves, that's when it starts showing up in our relationship with our kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful.
I wonder if you have any other ideas about signs that we're kind of headed in the wrong direction with self-care, or signs that we need to give some more time and attention to it. Obviously, we talked about the rage, the explosions, the, you know, that cycle of blowing up and feeling guilty. But I think the more and more we can recognize earlier on in the process, instead of waiting until that huge blow up, the better off we can be. So how can we back the train up and start to recognize some of these things sooner?
So, you know, I go down the path of discussing boundaries and self-compassion. Our relationship with ourselves is the most important. And I would suggest to you that how we are relating to God reflects how we're relating to ourselves. There's a direct connection. And so you could look and assess, how do I see God? How is my experience of God similar to how I'm relating to myself? Now, I'm not suggesting you're God, by the way, right now. I'm suggesting that how we engage our kids, how we engage our partners or really good friends or our mother or father, our relationships begin with how we're relating to ourselves. And so then ask ourselves, what are we doing? How do we feel about our life? Are we feeling good enough? Do we feel like we're in a shame spiral many days? How do we feel about ourselves? Our relationship with ourselves does reflect out in how we engage everyone else.
Well, one of the things that you write really powerfully about, Teresa, and we've already touched on it a little, is this idea of self-differentiation, this idea that we need to know who we are apart from our husband, apart from our children, apart from our role as homeschool moms. Can you talk to us a little bit about that and what that has looked like for you?
Yeah, well, self-differentiation, I'm not going to give a Merriam-Webster dictionary definition. Like the words boundaries or self-care, they have baggage of explanation. Like many people have different ideas of what that means. When someone introduced it to me for the first time, it was in my therapy. And I did a deep dive into discovering that I am a separate person outside of other people. And that would sound obvious. And yet it is. I would love to do research to discover how many homeschool moms find themselves easily enmeshed in the emotions and energy of all the people around them. I think we're going to have a higher percentage or a higher likelihood of being enmeshed. And what that really looks like is what we're speaking to already, of not recognizing that we are separate people. Now, I was thinking about a couple different ways that we could understand why it's valuable to be self-differentiated in a homeschool. One of them is to recognize that the way we learn is not necessarily the way our child learns. They're different. And so it helps me to be more accepting of relationships, but it also helps me accept my kids in whoever they are and how they learn.
Yes. And I think it also helps. It helps us not to have our self-worth tied so tightly to the way our children respond to our homeschool.
That was my second point. Yeah.
If I, you know, present this beautiful lesson to my children and they're completely not into it, that doesn't say anything about me or my worth or my value as a person. That's for them to own and that's for them to work through. But yeah. I'm still fine over here. And if my child doesn't get into Harvard or, you know, become some amazing, impressive thing, or maybe they even grow up to say, I really didn't like the way you homeschooled me.
Yes.
That's okay. That's their journey and that's for them to own. And my value as a human being is not tied to how they feel about me. And when you can start to separate those two things, you're able to bring this calmness to your interactions with your kids that they really crave.
Yeah, because everybody wants to be seen and heard, and most definitely our children, most definitely. And there is, by the way, no way that we're going to see them and hear them all the time. I just want to like throw that out there, that this notion of perfection in any of what we're speaking to, it's not possible. And how do we know? It's because we grow. We're signing up for growth in this life by being in this life. And so the whole point is for all of us to grow. And if that's the case, we're never getting to that place of perfection. But I think there's another area very closely tied to what you're speaking to, that we can also use that self-differentiation concept. And for me, it's been my most challenging element of homeschooling or the mothering life. And it is that my children can have different reactions and big emotions that don't make sense to me. And they can be big and loud or small and insecure, but they don't have to reflect how I experience things emotionally. That's been a really big one. I think you've been specifically given these children for you to learn from. And in the beginning years, I thought, okay, well, I've got my schedule. Like even before homeschooling, I've got my schedule. This is how we're going to do life. And this is when we're going to youth group. This is when we're going to Sunday school. This is when we're like, everything was laid out and I was going to approach family life in a certain way. And I had no idea that the biggest thing about this whole mothering thing is actually me learning from them. And of course they're learning from you. That's a given too, but that I'm learning from them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you brought out that this is not something where we're shooting for perfection. Perfection is not possible. It's not the goal. None of us are ever in this life going to nail this every time. But we can, as we become aware of it, as we pray about it, as we process, as we journal, as we talk with a friend or a therapist, we can move in a more healthy direction. And so no matter where you are, it's just a matter of taking one small step down the path.
Yeah.
So if there's someone listening who's saying, this is all new to me, I have not been doing any of these things, I'm completely overwhelmed, where would you suggest they start?
Well, I have opened up my schedule in the last week. I offer free times to connect throughout the week, and I don't remember what the days are, but a Calendly link available on my website, and it's probably one of the first things that you see on my website. And you're welcome to connect with me there first. I have courses online and I offer group coaching, which is super fun. And I have a Patreon support group that I engage these kinds of conversations with the folks that are in that group. And, you know, there's so many different ways to approach it, but I know that having another person come alongside you and help clarify what's actually going on is really useful.
Definitely. And we'll make sure to link to all of that as well. And your book, of course, we want to make sure everybody uses that as a resource. And you have a lovely podcast as well, where there's lots of these kinds of conversations available for people. Sometimes that's really helpful too, just listening to other people processing these kinds of issues.
Yeah, it has been beautiful. I started in this closet. So I'm with you.
Yes, that's right. I know one thing that I've heard Julie Bogart say, she's someone that I know you love as well. I remember her suggesting to a mom that's in this situation, just go to the grocery store and pick out a kind of yogurt that you think you would like. If you're completely out of touch with what you like to do, if you say, I have no idea where I would even begin, go to the grocery store, look at all those little individual cups of yogurt that are like a dollar, and pick one that you would like. Not based on, you know, which one's the cheapest, which one your
kids want,
will enjoy. Yeah, just you. Which one do you like?
Yeah.
You can pick it up and try it. And if you find that you don't like the one that you picked, that's great too. That's information that you didn't have before. You're stretching those muscles of thinking through, what do I need? What do I like? Because I hear so often from people, and I remember when I was in this place where it was like, okay, my husband took the kids on a walk. I have an hour of quiet time.
Yeah, time to clean.
What do I even do? Yeah, I don't know what I like to do.
I'm
so far removed from that place. I don't know what I do for fun. I don't know what fills me up. And then if you try something and it doesn't help, then you feel so frustrated because you're like, well, this is a complete waste of time. I put forth this effort and it didn't really do anything for me. So I'm just going to forget all about this and not even try, because nothing I do is going to work. That's so easy to fall into that place. and not recognize that if your bucket is completely empty, the first drop you put in there probably is not going to feel like it makes any difference. But over time, as you continue to make those little decisions to take a little bit of time for yourself here and there.
15 minutes. That's what I say. Just try 15 minutes a week.
Yeah.
And it does. And then you get clear on what you want to do or how you would spend time outside of that realm. And it really does help create a margin of like space or just breathing space. You feel more energized when you go back to your family. Actually, in the beginning, there's such a deep need to get space that all you think is, I want to go to the grocery store alone. But if you've been doing grocery store alone for your quiet time long enough, I encourage you to find somewhere else to go, because that is not a fun place. When you were back in your, you know, late teens, early 20s or mid 20s, whenever you were grocery shopping for yourself before the kids, that was not a fun place. That was not a fun place to hang out. It's still not a fun place. I know that there's fewer voices, theoretically, than when you're in your own home and needing and, you know, requiring something from you. But if you can spend just 15 minutes a week doing literally anything. I think you actually mentioned on my podcast that at times you'll go for a walk to the mailbox.
Yes, yeah. Walking to the mailbox is my go-to.
Yeah.
My go-to. It's beautiful. You know, our mailbox is a little bit farther away maybe than some people.
Perfect.
So it takes me a little while to get there.
Yes.
And I just, if I can sense that I'm starting to get agitated, I just say to everyone, I'm going to go check the mailbox. And my kids are a little bit older now, so they can make it 15 minutes without burning down the house.
Yeah.
So that's good. But when they were littler, I'd put them in the stroller and take them with me to the mailbox. Yeah. We'd all go on the walk together. So yeah, finding those little ways to release some of the stress. Well, we will make sure to link to all of the things we mentioned today. Where can people find you online, Teresa? They would like to connect with you more.
Most of the time, Instagram, but I've got a support group on Facebook. I've got a paid support group in Patreon where I connect with people for a couple hours each month. And my website, capturingthecharmedlife.com.
Thank you so much, Teresa, for sharing your time with us today. Be sure to check out the show notes page at homeschoolcompass.com/podcast. For links to Teresa's book, Homeschool Mama Self-Care, Nurturing the Nurturer, as well as all the ways you can connect with her for coaching and support. We're so grateful to each one of you who are listening in today. We know that your time is limited, and we are honored that you've chosen to share some of it with us. If you know someone who would be encouraged by this conversation, we would love for you to share it with them. If you're on social media, you can always take a screenshot of your podcast player and share it and tag us at Homeschool Compass. We love seeing where you're listening in from. And as always, it's so helpful if you tap those 5 stars in your podcast player and leave us a quick review. Thank you for listening. And until next time, remember, you are loved and you are not alone.